Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the conference call of EDVA Optical Networking for the first quarter 2022 IFRS financial results. This call is being recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participants have difficulties hearing the conference, please press star key followed by zero on your telephone for operator assistance. And now I hand you over to Mr. Stephen Williams, EDVA Optical Networking's Director, Treasury and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Lucas, and welcome to EDVA's Q1 2022 Financial Results Conference Call. In addition to this call and the press release, we have posted a presentation which is available for download from our homepage, EDVA.com, on the conference call page in the Financial Results section of the About Us/Investor section. Before turning the call over to Brian, please be reminded that this presentation contains forward-looking statements with words such as believes, anticipates, and expects to describe expected revenues and earnings, anticipated demand for networking solutions, internal estimates, and liquidity. These factors are discussed in greater detail in the Risk and Opportunity Report section of our Annual Report 2021. Please also be reminded that we provide consolidated pro forma financial results in this presentation solely as supplemental financial information to help the financial community make meaningful comparisons of our operating results from one financial period to another. This pro forma information is not prepared in accordance with IFRS and should not be considered a substitute for historical information presented in accordance with IFRS. Pro forma operating EBIT is calculated prior to non-cash charges related to the stock compensation programs and amortization and impairment of goodwill and acquisition-related intangible assets. Additionally, expenses related to M&A and restructuring measures are not included. Unless stated otherwise, all numbers are presented in euro. We will target to limit this conference call to 60 minutes. As usual, Brian will start this call providing a business update. Then, Uli will guide us through our Q1 financials and outlook. And finally, we will have sufficient time for your questions, which we'll be happy to answer. And with that, I'll turn the call over to Brian. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Stephen. Let's move to page 4, Q1 2022 financial highlights. Growth is our main message this quarter. And in general, we started 2022 strong. Despite ongoing challenges due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the semiconductor crisis, and supply chain bottlenecks, we delivered more product than expected, and we satisfied much of our customers' demand that is driving our growth. We met most of our targets and even exceeded them in many areas, although I personally would have hoped for less increases in semiconductor costs. More specifically, thanks to continued strong customer demand and great efforts in purchasing, manufacturing, and logistics, we were able to expand our revenues and achieve a successful start to this fiscal year 2022. Q1 revenues were up 18% compared to the year ago quarter at approximately euro 170.5 million. Our pro forma operating income dropped to a respectable 4.6% in Q1 2022, down 39.3%, but still giving us a solid start to maintain our annual guidance range of 6 to 10%. Net cash was up by 11.4 million year on year, even though we spent aggressively to secure our supply chain and support our strategic suppliers. A secured supply chain should help us generate cash throughout the rest of the year. Most excitingly, and even with record revenues for a Q1, we are starting Q2 2022 with a record order backlog after setting, once again, record order entry in Q1 2022. Moving to the next slide, page 5, innovation supporting our business transformation. We have a positive macroeconomic demand environment, and the growth drivers for our industry are fully intact. In addition, as already outlined on the previous quarters, we have defined three strategic goals that will lead us to sustainably higher margins. First, increased growth in software and services. Second, accelerated growth in new markets outside the traditional telco space with a high degree of differentiation. And third, revenue growth and cost reduction through verticalization. Our innovation engine is focused on supporting these business transformation goals. Since our last earnings call, we announced several interesting new pieces around new products and customer solutions, and I want to highlight a few. Number one, our new GNSS assurance software helps to protect third-party timing receivers from cyber attacks. This is key as synchronization based on satellite signal is vulnerable to failure, interference, and cyber threats. And so network operators urgently need to protect their critical timing with continuous monitoring and assurance. Two, Toyo Corporation in Japan is now using our latest oscilloquartz atomic clock to enable researchers to achieve highest positioning accuracy. R&D institutions require such new levels of precision timing for field trials, and our market-first high-precision optical cesium technology meets the needs of verticals from telecom to critical infrastructure. Our optical cesium clock products will drive continual growth for oscilloquartz business unit over the coming years. One of Northern Germany's largest power grid operators, Point 3, has successfully completed a field trial of quantum-secure data transport using the ADFA FSB 3000 platform with ConnectGuard Layer 1 encryption technology. For the first time, with a full commercial solution, a future-proof key exchange based on quantum key distribution was used to encrypt data across aerial fiber cables, a very important aspect for power utilities. And point four, last but not least, in the area of verticalization, we further expanded our MicroMux product family and launched the MicroMux Edge BiDi module, a highly integrated multiplex solution that offers interesting added value in the rollout of 5G mobile networks, essentially allowing for 4x10 gig BiDi communication within one module, built specifically for 5G opportunities, but can be used in various other use cases and application areas. These are only a few examples on how we are sustainably improving our cost base, expanding software and services revenue, and accessing new markets, all in the context of our open edge networking philosophy and with the commitment to be trusted, to be a trusted supplier for technologies that builds a trusted network infrastructure. Page six, innovation for the converged edge. The innovation news I highlighted on the previous slide do not only support our own business transformation strategy, but are also supporting the joint vision we have with ADTRAN for the converged edge. As you all know, on August 30th, 2021, we announced, together with ADTRAN, our intention to create a global market leader for scalable communications technologies with a focus on the so-called network edge. The business transaction combines ADTRAN's global leadership in residential fiber access, specifically fiber to the home, and local loop solutions, which you see in the middle of the slide, with our global leadership in data center interconnect, solutions for large enterprises, business connectivity, that is business Ethernet or fiber to the building infrastructure, metro WDM, and network synchronization. Together, we are well prepared to address new requirements, especially with regard to the convergence of the network solutions at the network edge. The combined portfolio is based on a common philosophy of open, disaggregated, and software-centric networking products that create the industry's most comprehensive solution set from the premise to the core. The merger will create significant long-term value for all stakeholders of both companies by further enhancing our ability to serve as a trusted supplier to customers worldwide with a broader product offering. The majority of the shareholders of both companies have approved the transaction, and we are currently working with the German authorities on open issues regarding foreign trade regulation. We are making progress and confident that we will attain the necessary approvals. And page 7, before I hand off to Uli, the ADVA Terra Factory. I want to share a piece of exciting news regarding our core facility in Meiningen. Early this month, we broke ground for our new Terra Factory. On the photo on the upper right, you see the Prime Minister of the state of Thuringia, Bodo Ramelow, with an oversized spade with Christoph Glingner in the background, our CTO, helping us to get started with an exciting expansion project at one of our most important sites. With a total investment scope of around euro 12.4 million, which is partly government funded, we are building a new state-of-the-art facility in the heart of Europe that includes R&D, new product introduction, and operations. We will use a high degree of automation, and this includes robotics, smart logistics, smart manufacturing, all supported by our own ADVA Campus 5G network and lots of solar power. The combination of highly skilled employees with our planned automation investments will make us cost competitive on a global level. In times of deglobalization, supply bottlenecks, and higher cost of energy and transportation, we sharpened our profile as a trusted supplier with local value creation in the Western world. We're excited about the new capabilities we can drive from this facility, expected to be fully operational in the second half of 2023. I think Uli will take us through the next slides, and we'll be back for the Q&A. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian, and welcome everybody. As Brian mentioned, revenues in Q1 reached 170.5 million euros, up by excellent 18% from 144.5 million in the year ago quarter. Similar to recent quarters, our success was limited by supply shortages. Nevertheless, today we report the highest quarterly revenue number in our history. Customer demand continues to be very strong. However, growth is becoming more and more a matter of execution. Higher purchasing costs due to the silicon shortages and the appreciation of the US dollar had a significant impact on our gross margins and increased our COGS by a substantial amount in Q1 2022. Consequently, gross profit decreased by 3.5%. Pro forma EBIT margin was a solid 4.6% compared to 8.9% we have seen in Q1 2021. In the year-ago quarter, we had informed the capital markets that profitability was exceptionally high when compared to our historical Q1 results. Given the extremely difficult external circumstances, we are very pleased with our performance. Net income reached 6.2 million euros, down from 11.2 million in the year-ago quarter. And consequently, diluted earnings per share were 12 cents compared to 22 cents a year ago. We have been using some of our excess cash to secure supply and still managed to improve net cash by 11.4 million euros year over year. Slide 10, please. As explained in the past, we added this slide for the purpose of transparency and to provide our analysts and investors an enhanced comparison since most of our peers report their numbers in US GAAP. Please note the US GAAP numbers here have not been audited. The main differences between the two standards are due to the capitalization and amortization of R&D under IFRS. The R&D amortization leads to higher COGS, and for Q1, the resulting difference in gross margin is 6.6 percentage points. The R&D capitalization, on the other hand, leads to lower OPEX. Positive EBIT impact from R&D capitalization was 0.7 percentage points, and thus pro forma EBIT margin under IFRS was 4.6% compared to 3.9% under US GAAP. Slide 11, regional revenue development. EMEA was once again the strongest region. Q1 revenues increased slightly by 0.2% year over year, now representing 56.5% of revenues. Demand continues to be strong, especially from communication service providers and enterprise customers. In the Americas, Q1 revenues increased substantially by 61.3% year over year, now representing 34.7% of revenues in Q1, and is now back to former strength. Growth was primarily driven by communication service and internet content providers. Compared to the year-ago quarter, Asia-Pacific increased substantially by 29.3% and now represents 8.8% of Q1 revenues. Growth in Q1 was predominantly driven by strong demand for private enterprise networks in the financial services sector. Moving to the next slide. As mentioned in the beginning, we spent some of our excess cash to secure our supply and thus increased our inventory levels substantially when compared to the year-ago quarter. Hence, operating cash flow was negative 12.7 million euros. CapEx and R&D investments increased substantially, mainly due to the expansion of our production site in Meiningen and capitalized development activities, which led to a cash flow from investments of negative 22 million euros compared to negative 12.3 million euros in Q1 2021. As a result, free cash flow was negative 34.7 million euros compared to positive 15.1 million euros a year ago. Our debt leverage ratio of 0.5 times EBITDA and an equity ratio of 58.9% supports our very solid capital structure and investment grade credit metrics. Q1 ROCE on a LTM basis was 10% and reflects our commitment to deliver shareholder value. Slide 13, outlook. Despite ongoing difficulties caused by the external environment, we had a good start into the 2022 financial year and showed strong execution. Demand is driven by the digitization of ecosystems and the expansion of communication networks supported by public funding programs in many regions and countries. Our investments in innovation in recent years have laid the foundation for a differentiated portfolio of solutions which enables us to grow. And finally, the transformation of our business towards growth markets with a higher share of software and services, as well as more verticalization, is developing well and should support our margins. Nevertheless, the entire industry is confronted with challenges arising from the global shortage of semiconductors. It's all about execution, securing supply, and the ability to deliver products while managing significantly higher purchasing costs. We currently assume that the semiconductor crisis will continue for the remainder of the year. And with respect to the COVID-19 pandemic, it remains to be seen whether new lockdowns in China or other parts of the world will lead to further tightening of supply chains. We also cannot foresee if new virus variants will appear, leading to further restrictions. Considering the positive demand environment, but recognizing the supply challenges, we reiterate our full year guidance for 2022 with annual revenues of between 650 and 700 million euros and a pro forma EBIT margin of between 6 and 10%. Now to slide 14.
Last but not least,
just a brief update on the ongoing merger process with Adyen. The last outstanding closing condition is the FDI approval from the German government, which we still expect to receive within Q2 or Q3 this year. And with that, thank you, and I would like now to open the Q&A session.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We're now opening the Q&A question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Your questions will then be answered in the order they are received. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. One moment, please, for the first question. The first question is coming from Robert van der Horst at Warburg Research. Your line is now open.
Hi, everyone. Congratulations on the excellent growth figure there. I do have a question. I read through your report and the wording in terms of your outlook regarding the chip shortage seems to be a little, has gotten a little less optimistic, I suppose. So you don't really expect significant improvements now in the second half of the year also. I would just like to have like a little, an idea how, a little more detail maybe on how you see the situation right now, how it has developed in Q1, how it's continuing in Q2, and when you expect maybe some improvements in this area, that would be great. Thanks.
So basically, definitely we believe there's going to be challenges into 2023. And I think if you look at the industry as a whole, that's consensus at this point. There are good signs. Things like TSMC realizing more than half their revenues on 7 nanometers and above high performance nodes, which means people are transferring designs into the latest and greatest wafer fab infrastructure, which means that reduces the stress on, let's say, the older nodes like 16, 20 nanometer nodes, et cetera, that are needed for a lot of the designs that the comms community uses. And therefore, we believe things are getting better. We do believe that it's going to be a slow tail, though. We hope that we're peaking Q1, Q2 as far as costs. Because you see it in our margins, it's a brutal impact, clearly. But like I said, we hope things slowly get better into Q2, the second half, and then no longer our major challenges is in 2023. That's kind of how we view it at this point.
Thanks. Maybe a short follow-up on the top line, because in Q1 you actually reached a number significantly above my estimates. So I was just wondering if this is something you think you can keep up, or are you expecting that maybe those shortages will also impede on your top line development more in the coming quarters or in the coming quarter than it did in Q1. So did you just get lucky, or is it just good procurement and we can expect that to continue?
I think, you know, I believe that we, you know, are driving revenues. Margins are lower, revenues are higher, and that model where I reiterated our 6 to 10% guidance means that, you know, we making comments that the chip shortage is through 2023, therefore that will have impact on gross margins, and yet we're keeping our guidance where it is, would mean, yes, more strength in revenues than originally planned because of a combination demand and our ability as an organization to actually access what's necessary to drive revenues. Part of that is also we've used a lot of our cash, as you see in our balance sheet, in order to secure, as I mentioned, both components as well as our supplier, let's say, infrastructure to be able to respond to our increased revenue demand. And even though we had very good revenues in Q1, I also made the clear statement, I think for those listening to my presentation, was that our backlog increased once again, and we had record order entry in Q1, you know, which indicating very strong book-to-bill. So the environment is such that we are now planning higher revenues with lower margins, but the same framework on performing EBIT.
Okay, perfect. That was very helpful. Thanks.
The next question is coming from Hugo Paternoster at Kepler Cheuvreux. Your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Can you hear me well?
Yes.
Great, excellent. My first question is related to your top line development. As you have had strong growth in Americas, I just wonder if you could shed some more light on that, apart from the FX impact, to what extent this performance can be replicated, and maybe could you give us some comment from where it comes in terms of demand or customer types?
So as some of you recall, we were a little bit defensive when people said, America's injury, volumes are down. And we said, for a couple quarters, you guys, no problems. We haven't lost customers. We're strategically in a very similar position. Sometimes it's customer mix and product mix and just even ability to ship certain line cards that are needed. And I think it's, what it's doing is rebalancing. So the Americas, the statement is not that Americas is outgrowing the rest of the business. I think we're doing well in Europe. We're doing well in the Americas. We've continued to expand, our opportunities there. We're looking at expanding our customers, a customer base aggressively with our transformation strategy, and we are winning accounts there, step by step, small, even some medium-sized business opportunities. And so in the big context of things, I would view this as, I told you so, that America's, isn't weaker. We haven't lost customers. We're moving it along. We're still a strong player. We continue to win accounts in America. But I'm also not making the statement that America is going to radically outgrow our other regions. I think it's going to be, continue to evolve going forward. And it is our goal to ramp it faster with new customer wins, but we have that goal for Europe and Asia Pac as well.
Okay, great, thank you. And my second question is a follow-up in terms of profitability. So you maintain your pro forma EBIT margin guidance, so it implies some improvement in subsequent quarter. I just wonder if you could drive us through your assumption in terms of margin expansion and maybe more on the OPEX side development going in the subsequent quarter, as you already mentioned that you still expect some easing pressure on the semi shortage and which could play maybe positively from H2 on your gross margin.
Oli, do you want to grab that or do you want me to?
I can certainly start and then you can chime in if you have additional information. So overall, I don't think that the cost structure will change significantly in the second quarter. As you can see, we are up in certain areas, for example, in sales. We are up in R&D, maybe across the board based on inflation tendencies we see everywhere. Gross margin, I guess, at the end, there will not be a significant change. Freight costs will be up. Supply costs will be up. Expedited fees will be up, similar to what we have seen in Q1. And at the end, it comes down to, the customer and product mix, what will we be able to ship, and this could have an impact on the margin profile for the second quarter. But as Brian mentioned, we remain in our 6-10% yearly guidance, which should imply that, we should see probably a higher EBIT margin in the second quarter already to get into that corridor that we are guiding. Brian, do you want to talk about the price increases?
I would just waiting is to, increasing revenues, margins, yes, as I'd indicated, semiconductor crisis, we hope we've seen the peak now, and it's going to stay really tough in the second half as well, in Q2 and the second half, but don't believe it's getting worse, and therefore slow recovery there. I don't think we want to name exactly, percentage numbers there, but I think you'll have hopefully a step-by-step incrementally linear development on that layer. And then we are doing things to also counter lower margins. And that is, we have selectively had to increase pricings where our costs have increased dramatically for the longer time. So we've been looking at all these costs, and some of them are long-term effects, some of them are freight, some of them are short-term PPV, some of them are sourcing, new sourcing channels in order just to get product at all. And we've kind of managed through that and say, what are the long-term impacts? And we're already starting to adjust pricing and, you know, to counter those mid to long-term effects, as Uli just mentioned. But in general, the shift, you know, I've already said this once, but I'm just going to say shifting to maybe you could look at higher end of framework and revenues, margins coming down, but staying right in the same corridor on the 6 to 10% pro forma EBIT.
Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot. That was my last questions.
The next questions are come from Hannah Malesh at Oddo BHF. Your line is now open.
Hello?
Your line is now open, yes.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay, hey. Hi, everyone. Thank you for this presentation. For my part, I have three questions, if I may. The first one is a follow-up on growth in Americas. I had in mind that the backlog in there was very strong, but it was more focused on products that you couldn't really deliver or you had difficulties to deliver. So this strong growth, apart from the Forex effect, is it more coming from the new clients that that you mentioned, market share gain, or is the easing pressure on shortages regarding the backlog in the Americas? Should I give you all the questions or one by one?
One by one. So the first one, I guess, again, to go back to the Americas. When our numbers were lower, we were saying we were booking better than what our numbers were showing. We had indicated that a few times. So that's one aspect. It's the shift back, as you know, that was relevant to supply chain, product mix, et cetera. That's one issue. Second one is, our customers are expanding clearly demand in the U.S. It's a good market environment, but it's just, you know, it's our customers, our main big customers, you know, that we're growing with that demand. Third is, yes, there is some Forex advantages that we get as the dollar is in the 105, 106, 107 range right now versus that 118, 119, 120 range. It means we are getting higher contribution out of the United States as well. So there's a number of reasons, but I'm going to restate what I said, and that is I feel there has not been a shift, fundamental shift in our regional strengths. And the U.S. is, my guess it's in that, 30 to 38% range kind of thing, 28 to 38% range. And depending on a lot of different factors, could that shift to 33 to 40%? Yes, based on a very strong dollar and continue new wins. And we are winning stuff, especially with some of our business transformation products. You know, some of the things, even are self-limited. We can't ship enough products. We'd have more volume and more margins in the United States. So there's, the framework is solid, but there isn't a fundamental shift here, you guys. And I think that's what you guys are getting at. Is there something in the bush, or ADFA is going to grow fundamentally much faster in the United States than in Europe or in APAC? And I don't get the sense. I think both, U.S. is strong, solid, good opportunity. Second question.
Okay, thank you. The second one is about the cost structure. Just to have an idea about your natural hedging, can we have an idea about the percentage of sales labeled in dollar and the percentage in costs, just to have an idea about the hedging?
So this is not cost structure. You want actually revenue contribution, dollar revenue contribution, and how much is being converted into euros, essentially. That's what you'd like.
Yes, and the impact, even in terms of costs, so in top line and in bottom line, I would say.
So you're asking for transparency on revenues as well as OPEX. Uli, I don't know what you want to give there.
Yes, okay. Yes, both.
Yeah, are maybe. I can give a little bit of light to that one. So maybe, first of all, there is a negative impact to our pro forma based on the current exchange rate environment. Since we purchase more in U.S. dollar, and I'm referring now only to the U.S. dollar, we purchase about 80% to 90% of our COGS is based on U.S. dollar, whereas only, as you can see in the slide, revenues is only 35% or maybe 40% at some point of time. So there's definitely a clear disadvantage. We also have, of course, some OPEX in U.S. dollar. So there is a negative impact to our profitability based on the current exchange rate environment, a few million, I would say, negative impact. However, you mentioned the word hedging. You refer to natural hedging, but of course we do some real hedging as well to offset this, which you will see then in our financial results to mitigate that impact for the net income.
Okay, thank you. And my last question is about the Terra factory. How is it going to contribute in adverse figures? I mean, you said that it was going to be operational in H2 2023, but when do you expect first revenues, and how will be the ramp up for this activity?
Well, first of all, if we get it done in Q3, you'll see first revenues in Q3 2023. If it gets done in Q4, it'll be first revenues in Q4 of 2023. This doesn't fundamentally change our model. What we're doing is rebalancing from a let's say, Asia-Pacific Euro op strategy to a Europe-led op strategy, more global in nature. And this has to do with the rebalancing after the trade wars and not only the political frameworks that we were facing, but also customers' demands. And what we didn't want to do clearly is we don't want to increase costs. So we looked at very, very various different models, and we brought in our bringing back, let's say, a lot of operational capabilities back into Europe. We've done a lot of that work already. But then we realized, you guys, some of our high-end stuff, we can drive equivalent cost like in APAC or in other regions by fully automating certain things. So we've selectively picked certain products that are now being manufactured with much more manual labor, and we are automating things. So again, robotics, software capabilities, the way you build the logistics facilities as a whole, all of that's being done so that we can build product. But we're building that product today already. It's not a new product that we're launching into the Terra factory. It'll be existing products, and there'll be two sources of those types of products, and ultimately maybe even 100% of certain things would be done in the Terra factory. So the answer is revenues, hopefully in Q3 of next year. If not, then in Q4 of next year. They will be with products that we already derive lots of revenues with today. It will be able to address low volume, very complex products, but also some of the things that we can attack will be higher volume, lower cost because of, like I said, the automation capabilities of our end-to-end planning.
Okay. Thank you very much. That was it for me. Thank you.
As a reminder, press 01 on your telephone keypad if you would like to ask a question. The next question is coming from Tim Savageau at Northland Capital Markets. Your line is now open.
Hi, good morning. I have question about the overall demand environment and your guidance, revenue guidance in particular. You know, given the commentary around bookings and backlog, which are, you know, both very strong, I would expect that you might expect some growth in the second quarter. And I just want to try and reconcile that with your unchanged guidance for the year, just given the degree of upside in Q1. You know, you're kind of suggesting in the middle of the range you're going to stay around this $170 million run rate throughout the year. Again, that seems conservative relative to the bookings and backlog commentary. You know, I imagine there are, you know, concerns around, you know, supply and that being, you know, the variability there informing that. But I wanted to, I mean, it seems like we should be biased toward the high end of the range here, at the very least. I'd love your commentary on that. And then overall, I hear you on the America side. It seems like you're catching up to demand. You know, there does seem to have been, you know, some degree of uptick in overall demand. And I wonder if you can describe, you know, are we reading that properly? And maybe what's behind that? And if you could talk a little bit more about the overall kind of pipeline environment on the optical side, or in particular among among carrier customers.
So what do you want to do, the first part, or?
Why don't you just start and...
Okay, so I'll start with the U.S. again, so we've already covered that quite a few times, and that is, I guess, demand solid. I don't, you know, I think it's hard to really understand the order run rate and long-term demand picture. Tim, I think you're looking at, you know, big picture here. I guess the sense that you get out of the industry is, yes, demand is at a higher rate than the forecasts in our product area, you know, let's say the optical area, which is, you know, the forecasts are fairly conservative, depending on who you listen to, 2, 3, 4, 5%. But I think the sense is that, yes, the demand environment is better than that, and it's not better for than that for the next quarter, but it seems to be a midterm, at least, environment. So demand environment is good, but that's not just the U.S., you guys. That's in general and throughout Europe as well. And we see that as a good environment to be doing business in. Still have to, you know, track all of this very closely, because remember, the massive backlogs and those massive orderings were coming off of a shift of securing, you know, product into the future, trying to avoid things like price increases, et cetera, like that. But even with that by side, we see a very good demand environment. Second part of the question frameworks was, yes, shifting to the upper end. Right now, coming off of Q1, that's what we're saying, is that revenue is shifting. You're right. At 170 times 4, you're already in the upper, you know, closing in. I think, what did we say, 650 to 700? So you could, what, you could do a $5 million increase each quarter from where we're at, and we're still in that range kind of area, you know, the upper guidance. And yes, we right now, as we look at our business, we're looking at our business upper range. We're not ready to change guidance, because we feel that, you know, in general, we're still in tune with where we guided at the beginning of the year, and feel comfortable at that 6 to 10%, which I think, you know, is the key metric anyway. But we're shifting revenue up, gross margins down, profitability solid.
Got it. Thank you.
The next question is coming from Johannes Ries at Apus Capital GmbH. Your line is now open.
Okay, thanks that it's now worked, because I had been cancelled several times as I tried to ask a question. I don't know why. If you only want to have a sell-side analyst, I don't know. But maybe only because some questions I want to ask. What of your revenue increase is price increase, and how much is volume? Because you also increase your prices, I think. No, or is it not the case?
I think in general the industry has increased pricing. Different people went earlier, different people later over the last 12 months. Some people even did two price rounds. I think at this point you're seeing no increase in our numbers. No price increase is influencing any of our numbers up to date. It is more of the impact will start to happen in the second half of the year and fully be realized into next year. From our price increases. So, but none of the revenue or the dollar demand, it's 100% real demand. Well, but there's an underlying theme throughout the next 12 months that you'll slowly get a little bit more of these price increases, because as people reacted to price increases, ADVA was very fair to our customers and said, listen, these are the reasons, very transparent, of what's happening in semiconductor costs and supply issues, and these are long-term costs that we just can't avoid, and then worked with our customer bases. And then some of them said, well, I don't want to accept that, and ordered, you know, long-term into the future and various strategies out there. So you only see some of those, you know, over a long period of time, some advantages off of those price increases. Okay. So like I said, it's a step-by-step process over the next 12 months, also probably in a kind of a linear fashion, and that should support both revenues and compensating some of these extra costs midterm.
Okay, I see. Therefore, it's not so easy to change the mind of your customers because they have been familiar with permanent decrease in prices, not increases.
Correct. Correct. That makes it's been a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of work on the end, because this was an ADVA as a lead. It was more ADVA as a follower to an industry that just, you know, woke up one day and realized, wow, we're between a very difficult situation of service providers that are very optimized and outstanding professional, you know, purchasing organizations pushing, and semiconductor suppliers that just didn't seem to be listening to our environment and just increasing because they could. And I think, you know, the industry has responded and said, well, we have to at some point recoup some of those costs. And so different people, different companies have different strategies, but in general, the industry has moved to a, you know, solidifying the pricing structure. And it seems to be, in general, accepted by the industry and the customer base. For most suppliers, not just ADVA specifically, but for the industry as a whole.
I see. So because we are in inflationary environment, therefore it's also hit your business in some regard. Né? Therefore that's one reason, maybe you said it before, maybe I missed it, that the margin in the full year can get better because you have this effect in the second half now.
Yeah, that's one of the, we hope we both have lower costs, you know, into the second half of the year, and we hope that, yes, price increases will slightly, you know, will help us into that second half of the year. And then we're working our business transformation strategy. I want to see more software and services. I want to see more non-telco business to balance our margin profiles. And then the verticalization is, we're doing really well. We have some outstanding, interesting products. Our biggest issue there is scaling the product volumes. And so that's just more time to scale some of these things. And those are kind of the topics that we're pursuing in order to recoup margins, drive ever greater profitability, et cetera. So kind of those three initiatives, business transformation. You know, pricing, you know, solidifies, and three, costs hopefully slightly decline, you know, linearly over the next 12, 15 months, and hopefully you don't see much of it left actually in 2023.
Okay, super. Do you see already demand which is coming from all this, or can you indirectly see if your customers are seeing it from all these infrastructure programs, especially in the U.S.? You mentioned during the ADVA roadshow that this is a big driver. Or is it something which comes in the year 23 and later?
Well, I think it's already helping. Clearly it's helping. It's part of, you know, demand creation in various regions. That's definitely, you know, part of it. I do believe in general, you know, digitization of society, bandwidth is continuing to grow nicely. And then you've got some of these, you know, this 5 to 7 year kind of wave of extra government funding on top of those two initiatives, so that you're in this kind of period where, you know, all of that is helping drive, you know, hopefully a consistent demand development environment for our industry as a whole.
Okay. Again, as the Atran deal was not the reason that you maybe have found more open doors in the U.S. So you mentioned it already before, there are other reasons. So this,
Yeah, as you most of you know, in an environment where you know you have a potential merger ahead of us, really one big hurdle left, but you don't work together in any way or form. So we have not been helping each other because you just can't. There's competitive landscapes. There's legal frameworks, and ADFA's always done everything by the book. We are not a company to play around, and Adtran's the same way. So we've been doing everything very professionally, but that means we haven't been able to help each other yet. And I think if we can close the deal, there will be further, very positive effects. And then most of the effects clearly come with the synergies and the combined organization, whether it's still two organizations or it's one organization, but you start to have then more aligned and positive effects coming off of the transaction.
All right. Thanks a lot.
The next question is coming from Simon Skolas at First Berlin. Your line is now open.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my question. I've just got one, and that's on inventories. I mean, you were talking about investing in inventories to secure your ability to deliver. I mean, just looking at the last quarter, I mean, you've gone from 129 million at the end of December to 130 million at the end of March. I mean, the big jump looks as if it happened in Q4, where you went from 100 to 130. I mean, I was just wondering whether we should expect any further sort of larger increases in inventories during subsequent quarters this year. Well, I mean, just in general, how you see the inventory situation. I mean, if you have to...
Well, let us answer the question, because it's a little bit more complicated than that. Uli, do you want to grab it?
I can start. You saw the big jump in Q4 already. If you compare it to Q1 of last year, it's significant, right? It's all about the ability to deliver, right? I mean, if we will continue, and I guess we indicated that we should be in the same magnitude as Q1, maybe higher, if we continue to be able to deliver, then our inventory should be rather flattish on that high level that we are right now. Will there be some volatility? For sure, right? Because again, we are investing a lot in buying components, securing components, but I would not believe, that there's a significant further uptick unless, we are really short on certain pieces where we have finished systems to the very end and then there's only a little piece missing and we cannot shift the system. But overall, I think this level is something you should expect throughout the year.
Okay.
So I'd like to add something there. So, from a cash perspective, because you're looking at inventories and the cash issues, the inventories grew year over year. They grew steady throughout over the last 12 months, up only slightly now in Q1, but we are doing things like prepayments. And as the exposure, remember, we're growing in exposure of our contract manufacturers and things. We are having to pay to secure infrastructure. That's why I said it very clearly in my presentation. We're paying to secure supply chain, both components and infrastructure. So some of that is coming from prepayments is another one that we are dealing with, and those are prepayments that have been rising quarter for quarter. As our business is growing, we need to take cash in order to secure driving this higher business volumes.
Okay, thanks. That's very helpful.
There are no further questions at the moment. For closing remarks, I give back to Brian Perceiver.
Thank you very much. Being an innovation company, number one on our list is to grow. Environment's not bad for that. We clearly have an opportunity to manage the business even better, and that is, control costs, drive up margins, execute on our business transformation. We're working hard on those things step by step. And we will hear from each other in 3 months. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.
Thank you.